Are we on, chaps? Oh, we are. I've not tried this microphone, I don't think. Have I? Have I had this on my head before? It doesn't suit me, does it, Beth? No. All right, well, clearly this morning is a little different. But if you don't mind, I'll just kind of grab the microphone and talk about some things. Is that all right? Ruth's nodding, so that's fine. Oh, I've even got a lectern. Oh, my goodness, this is serious. And isn't it wonderful what you can do with the internet? I've just downloaded a whole presentation about compassion. Isn't that good? Now, it's interesting. Louise alluded to the fact that we've had a funny week, so I better start with that story. On Friday night, those of you that have teachers in the family, those of you that are teachers, will appreciate that Friday night now is very precious, because literally other nights of the week you're planning for the following day of teaching, but Friday night, by about 3:30, the kids are gone, the buses are gone, and the car park in the staff area is literally emptied by about 3:31 p.m. Teachers just lock the classroom and worry about next week on Sunday evenings now. So my Sunday evening tonight is a little busy, as you might appreciate. But on Friday of last week, Helen, is that the case with you? No. You know, I'm not saying it's early. I'm just saying we just close the door and worry about it later on. Maybe it's, you're more experienced, Helen. That's what it is. I'm learning bad habits from the other teachers up here. But on Friday night of this week, just gone, we actually had a little different thing happening in our family, because I have a new colleague, and one of my new maths colleagues is from, I was going to say Holland, that's the wrong country, Belgium. Belgium, she's from Belgium. She's a young lady, she's 23 years old, and she just got offered a position here at the school and thought, why not? I will leave my home country, leave my family. She's got very good English, so obviously she's very good at teaching in that respect. And she's come over to our country to teach our children in our community, and she's a very good teacher. But I don't know about you, but I felt that it wasn't really fair for her to not have any friends, really, and to not be invited to anyone's house for dinner. So I said to her during the week, please come back to our house on Friday, because it'd be lovely for you to just chill. Because staying in a hotel room is not very nice. She hasn't got a flat sorted, hasn't got a car sorted. So she's stuck in the Forest of Dean without transport. That's not a blessing, I can tell you. So I said to her, come for tea, and she went, okay. So she came to our house on Friday, had a nice meal. Louise had cooked a nice meal, home cooked and all of that. And then I said, would you like to come for a walk with the dog? Because she's heard of the Forest of Dean, but she'd never been into the forest. So we hurdled the dog and some kids into our car and drove off to one of the nice lakes in the forest. And we had a lovely walk around this lake at around 6:30, 7 o'clock, something like that. And then we went around this lake, got back to the car, and there was a sign on my windscreen. And the sign said this, sorry that you've returned to your car late, we've locked you in. And I said to Louise, what time do they close this car park? This is Mallard's Pike, by the way, okay, just for those of you that are local. Nice lake. And I said, I'm sure it's 9 o'clock normally, what's going on? In the summer, oh, 1st of September, we decided 7:30, and it was 7:39, because you look at the clock and go, what? How has this happened? So just in case the person, the gatekeeper, was still at the gate, I literally said, get in the car, and I raced rather quickly back to the main gate where the main road is, and lo and behold, the gate was locked. There was nobody there. Now, our car is not a small car, so I wasn't I didn't decide to just go over the hedge or through the forest. It wasn't going to happen. So we thought about it for a while, much to the amusement of my Belgian guest, thinking, is this what happens in the forest? You get locked in, clearly. And we looked like numpties, of course. We looked a bit silly. But anyway, bless her. So we started, I know, we'll get the phone. We'll phone one of you guys. We'll say, please come and rescue us. Have you got a spare car? Just come and pick us up and take us home and we'll worry about our car tomorrow morning on Saturday. But of course, what happens in the forest with phone signals? There aren't any phone signals in the forest. So having a wonderful, fancy mobile phone is worth nothing in the Forest of Dean. Late. The sun is going down now, by the way, okay? And now we can't get out. So, Louise, I don't know what happened now, but I said, Louise, you go for a walk, see if you can find a phone signal. So Louise walks out of the gate, hops over the cattle grid and all that stuff, goes to try and find a signal. 20 minutes later, so we're still sat on the other side of the gate, just with our guests and the dog and everything. And then Louise eventually comes back saying, no signal. I've gone for like 10 minutes up here, there's no signal. Now, meantime, This is the key thing about this funny story, okay? You can laugh at it now, can't you? You don't laugh at it at the time, but you laugh at it afterwards. And so a family then comes without a car across the cattle grid. We're walking our dogs. And I went, well, I'm glad you're walking your dogs. And they laughed and went, are you locked in? And of course the answer was yes. So I'll shorten the story. Over the next probably 45 minutes, we try everything from taking the gate apart because I had some tools in the car. That didn't work. That's a man's solution. Let's see if we can take the gate apart. That didn't quite work. And couldn't find. I drove back into the car park to see if the other gates that go deeper into the forest were open. No, they were all locked with padlocks. So we really were well and truly stuck. But this family, bless them, they said, well, we've got a car on the other side of the gate. And we can see that your phone signal isn't working. Why don't we take your wife and we'll drive down 5 or 6 miles until we get a phone signal? Before I even had a chance to think about this, Louise was in their car being driven down the road of quite a few miles, it turns out. In fact, it was about another half an hour before she came back. I was thinking, where have they gone? And this chap very kindly had driven Louise until there was a signal where she could phone Nick, who had a spare car, who came and rescued us. And then we went back on Saturday morning to rescue our car. Does that make sense? Yes, I'm sure it does. So I had to say, and we were laughing, of course, and thankfully our Belgian guest had a sense of humor, even though they're from Europe. And we all laughed about it over a coffee when we got home. But here's the interesting thing. We were really grateful that when you get stuck, and there really wasn't much we could have done. It was just one of those things. I should add one little thing. There was a phone number on my windscreen on the piece of paper, not that we had a signal. And they could have come and unlocked it for £50. Now, Dad was getting some stick when I was saying, I am not paying 50 quid. I only live a few minutes up the road. So I just wanted to clarify that because Louise will tell you that side of the story over coffee later. But anyway, without a signal, doesn't matter. So we got home. But we were really grateful, seriously, that when we couldn't help ourselves, somebody else who was on the other side of the problem, the gate, was genuinely very helpful. And people in our country, and in fact, when Louise and I have got stuck in other countries where we've had cars break down and things on the continent, it's lovely that people often help. Their generosity overflows when you need them and you literally are quite helpless. Now, here's the funny thing. On Saturday morning, we had to go to rescue our own car because, of course, the gate was now open. People were walking the dogs. It was a nice sunny day yesterday. So we go back over to Mallard's Pike. The gate's open. Everything's fine. And then I park the car next to two, I call them young ladies, maybe in their 20s, something like that. And I got out of the car. And the first thing these girls said to me is, please tell me you know something about cars. And I looked at this very fancy Audi thinking, there's nothing I know that's going to help you with something like that. You need a laptop and a cable to fix cars these days, like, you know, compared to my knowledge of cars. And so they explained to me that their car just wouldn't start. Don't know what's gone wrong with it. The key won't turn in the ignition. And so I said, well, would you mind if I had a go? Because it's normally just a wiggle of the steering wheel with some of these things, with all the locks and security mechanisms. And within all of 3 seconds, I'd literally gone click, click with the wheel, put the key in, started it, and the car started. And of course, the girls thought I was amazing, which is lovely. And I smiled from ear to ear for the rest of the day. But it's nice, isn't it? And when we were doing this, I said to Louise, how could I, and I'm sure you'd be the same, how could I have accepted someone's help the day before when I needed it and then possibly rejected helping someone else literally a few hours later in virtually the same spot that we needed help the day before? And I just felt, and we talked about it afterwards, we just felt there is something quite right about those that have the means to help. There's an obligation to do so. And there will be times where even us rich Westerners, and as we're looking at compassion, and we'll look at some statistics in just a moment, as we look at that, we are so rich in our country. And that's a phrase that you've probably heard, like I have, in the news over the last few weeks in the context of people traveling from their home countries that are desperate for help because they come from war-torn cities and countries. And we are a rich nation. And there are times where we simply, it's not about the money, but it's about having the car on just the right side of the fence because we have the ability to help, even if it's not financially. And I want to just read something to you. It's a very well-known verse, if I can get my phone out of my pocket. It's a verse that you will know, I'm sure, very well. But it just kind of fits that little story about what happened on Friday night and yesterday morning. And it's this. It's in the book. In fact, mate, could we grab it, please, James? Could we bring that up, please? It's in, if I can get this to work. It's in the book of Matthew, Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Let's just see what Jesus says. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Thank you, James. In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. You've heard this before. For this sums up the law and the prophets. So this sums up everything that really matters. The instructions that God would like to give us as his created people. That sentence, treat others like you'd want to be treated, sums it all up. So we've just read. And so I would like, and I had the very fortunate experience of being helped. Therefore, I helped others. But here's the thought that I just wanted to bring on this Compassion Sunday. What if it's the other way around? What if someone asked for my help before I was helped? Would my approach have been the same? Would I have been just as willing to have helped those girls on Thursday night as I was on Saturday morning? Because that's the problem I think we fall into in the West. If we have been helped, we might then have an appreciation enough to help someone else. But what if we haven't? What if we haven't left a war-torn city or a country that's literally in a civil war? What if we haven't? Because most of us, myself included, we haven't experienced that. But there are times, I believe, God would say, before you get the help, your job is to help others. And there will be a time where you'll appreciate something coming back to you, but will you be the one to start the process? Or will you be the one that only helps once you've received something? Because this passage, well, the one that was just there, don't worry, James, that passage there about treating others how you would like to be treated, it's about that phrase, doing something early, doing it in advance of when you want to get it back. Now, James, there's a PowerPoint that I just managed to get about compassion. Can we pop that up, please? Some statistics for us, because I think it's important. We are a church where a lot of us have been involved in compassion for many years. Not necessarily speaking on their behalf, but just sponsoring children all over the world. Is it coming up, James? We'll just see how it works. It's amazing what you can do when the internet works, isn't it? Download a presentation a bit quick, get some statistics. Let's see if it comes up. It's just PowerPoint. Don't worry, I'll let you play with it. If it comes up, it comes up. Oh, can you go to slide 4 for me, guys, please? Thank you, James. Well done. Slide number 4. No, don't worry. I'm going to carry on then. Here's some statistics that I think are really, really important. Over 6 million children under the age of 5 die every single year. I'm just going to pause. 6 million. That's outrageous, isn't it? Isn't that outrageous? Slide 4, please, James, if you can. Over 700 people in the developing world live below the poverty line. Now, the poverty line is this minimum level of income that is now $1.25 per day. So that's less than a British pound, okay? 700 million people live below that level. So if we don't, if we aren't living on less than £1 per day, we're very blessed. We're very fortunate. We have a lot of resources, you might say. And finally, in developing countries, approximately 130 million children and teenagers, 17 or under, have lost one or both parents. That means that they're growing up into young men and young women without the nurture, without the care, without the steering of two parents because of circumstances largely outside of their control. And you might say, Steve, what does that mean, largely outside of their control? Well, did you choose where you were born? Did you choose which country, which hospital, which parents you had? Because I certainly didn't. And we didn't. We were born, most of us, I think, in a very healthy Western style, if not a British style, country. That means that we were very fortunate, but of course a lot of other people are not. So Nick is going to come and share with us in just a moment, because I'd like us to talk about some personal experiences of what compassion does. Louise showed you a picture of one of our compassion children, Kingsford. I knew Kingston didn't sound right. Kingsford. And what's lovely about our compassion children, we've had them, well, our eldest one is now, how old is she, Munica? She's about 15, and we had her when she was 2. So for 13 years, we've been sponsoring a little girl called Munica. She happens to be in India, actually. And we've seen the photographs change from a, how do I put this politely, a grubby little street urchin kind of child in rags, dressed in rags. And we've watched her. It's been a real privilege that as we have sponsored her each month, we've watched the photos change dramatically into not only a handsome, gorgeous young lady, but she's got clean clothes, she's got shoes, she's got school books, and her photos, a bit like the one that Louise, I know she held it up from a distance, but the photo of that young boy, Kingsford, holding up things that matter to them that they need, shoes, a book, pencils for school. And it's so humbling to think that, admittedly, yes, okay, it's cost us, was it £19 a month? Or initially it was probably 10 or 12, 20-something a month. But we are enabling someone to live completely for that amount of money. And we're very pleased to do that. We have this young boy, Kingsford. What I want to do, Nick, you're going to come and talk about your experiences of compassion in just a minute. Oh, you're not going to talk about compassion. Oh, it's not? Okay, we'll come up in just a second. What I'd like to do is we're going to try one more technical thing. There's a video, James, called Gamoa Dago. You can tell me why it's Gamoa Dago. This is a video of the town that we, as Forest Gate, have connected with. This is in Ghana, okay? So Kingsford, he's not on this video, but he's one of the children that lives in this town. Now, when, Helen, I think you might recognize this, when we've done kids' work before, we've shown the kids this video because it's not a posh thing with emotional music. It doesn't have to be. It's a raw video about how kids live in this town. And we've said to the children, what differences exist between the living lifestyle that we have with our schools and food and supermarkets? What differences exist between how we do things and what you see on this video? So fingers crossed, James, does it work? Oh, I think it might. We need some volume, Andrew, as well. Ah, lovely. Let's watch it and see. Interesting, isn't it? So let's do what we did with the children when we showed our children that video. Who would like to suggest something that they thought was different about what you just saw compared to the way we live? Let's have an interactive morning, shall we? Any thoughts? They looked very communal, as in they were helping each other, working together, sharing. Nice, okay. The way they cooked. How did they cook? Did you see? There was an enormous grill with fish. Did you see the big fish all lined up? I don't like fish, but it's not the issue. Anything else? What else did you spot that was interesting or different? Carrying water and the big bowls on the heads. Did you notice the color of the water at all? Didn't look like something I wanted to drink, I must admit. It certainly looked, well, it was very brown. I'm not sure I'd want to drink that at all. Anything else? They looked happy? No. Satellite dishes, tablets, games consoles for the children? No, I didn't see any of that. I'm not even sure I saw electricity, actually. Not sure I saw any wires. I may have missed that. What did you see? Did she get it from a nice big tap? No. From the river? Yeah. Well spotted. Very good. Did you see animals? Do you think the animals go into the river? Yes. What do you think the animals do? Let's not go any further. But I think you probably can guess that the animals do all sorts in the river. In fact, I'm not sure that I saw a flushing toilet. In fact, I doubt that I saw a flushing toilet. So things are very, very different, aren't they, in that place? Now, I think it's interesting, Henry's comment. I don't think we should assume that those people are unhappy at all. And I don't think we should assume that they can't know Jesus. And I don't think we should assume that they're not content with their life. But I think it's right to say that those children's future are in them being educated and being kept healthy and clothed and secure and having shelters for bad weather, etc., etc. That's the kind of stuff that I know we're providing, and a lot of you as well. When you took out your Compassion Children in that same village, that's the village that I think, if I remember correctly, it was 12 of us, 12 families, or whether it was individuals, but 12 people sponsored children in that village so that it makes a difference to an actual place. So Nick, did you want to just come and tell us, please, about your experience? Yeah, that'll do.
Okay, so the child that Kev and I sponsor, and Aaron, we started sponsoring him in 2003. And I can remember extremely clearly, Aaron had been born just 3 weeks before, and we were invited up to a church in Colford because Nia, who many of you will recognise the name, was doing a concert. And so Kev and I took Aaron up, probably one of our first major trips out, and we enjoyed the evening listening to Nia sing. And then we heard about they wanted children to be sponsored. And Kev and I were in a really difficult position because having just given birth, I wasn't working and my wage had dropped significantly. And we weren't quite sure how we were going to afford everything else at that point. And so to be put in a position where I thought, oh, I don't know, you know, that people were asking us to sponsor, and yet we didn't know whether we could afford it. But we both felt there and then that God was saying he wanted us to sponsor this little boy. And so I don't know what the word is, take a chance, take a risk. I don't know what the word is, but we felt so strongly that God was calling us to sponsor this little boy that we there and then started to sponsor him. What was interesting is after taking that leap of faith, I guess would be a good word to use, within a couple of days, through the post came an announcement that we were going to be receiving pretty much that same amount every month because we now had a child. And so it was reassurance to us that we had made the right decision. So that was back in 2003. At the time, the little boy that we sponsored was Colleen, his name is. He was just 4 years old. And the money that we were going to be paying every month was going to be going to him being clothed, for him to be having an education, for him to have meals each day, and for him to have access at a school whereby he could have medical facilities, and he could also go to a toilet, which sounds a bit bizarre, but like Steve was saying on that film there, no toilets, no washing facilities, no clean water. Colleen didn't have those things either. So we sponsored Colleen, and in 2007, our family were fortunate enough to go out to Romania and see where Colleen lived and to go and visit the school. And it was fantastic to see how the money was being spent and to have the opportunity to meet Colleen. And I think the great thing about sponsoring people through Compassion or through Smiles or through any of the organisations we hear about through church is very often you get contact from the children and contact from the organisations, and you know where your money is going, and you know that it's going to help the children and help their families rather than just going in a pot and you never seeing it again. So for us, it has been a wonderful experience. Colleen is now, I think, 15 or 16 years old, and we have literally only in the last couple of months stopped sponsoring him because we are going to be grandparents. From Colleen, that is, just to confirm. And so we are in a position as a family at the moment to think, what next? And we don't know at the moment, you know, whether that will be a child through Compassion, another child through Smiles. We're taking it very seriously, and we want to make the right decision. But for those of you who are thinking about sponsoring, it is a wonderful thing to know that you are helping, even if it's just that one person, you know, you are making a difference to somebody's lives. You are clothing them, you are feeding them, you are giving them clean sanitation. It makes a real big difference. So If it is something that you are thinking about and you want to ask me and Kev any questions about it, please come and see us. We'd, you know, be more than happy to talk about our experience. That if it's something that you think, I'd love to do it, but maybe I haven't got the money to do it, then I would encourage you to speak to mum and dad, because there is a child that we sponsor through the church as a whole, and they are always looking for somebody just to simply write to that child. Now, I've done it once. I have to say, it was a brilliant thing to do, to just sit down and think about that person and what they might be going through. So again, if it's something that you might like to do, then speak to mum and dad, because they're always looking for somebody to write to that person each month. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good experience. So just to finish, obviously we haven't had a huge sermon prepared, but I still think, just as I've been thinking about it now, that concept, that verse we just read from Matthew chapter 7, about treating others as we would like to be treated, that's profound. That's so deep. We don't need 10 other verses to back that up or explain it. It simply says, do to others as you'd like them to do to you. And a few years ago, just to finish with one more story, a few years ago, I went, on behalf of this church actually, I went to Romania when I was with a whole group of other church leaders. There was about 12 of us that went. And Romania was not Ghana. Different problems, but still just as striking. There are people there that are hungry, that don't have clothes to put on their body. They don't have houses or any form of shelter. They are homeless. There's huge amounts of problems. And I was there with these pastors. I'm just trying to think, were they all male? No, there weren't. There were some ladies. Thank you. There were some ladies. And I was struck by something. And it's one of these things where you look in the mirror and you think, okay, God, that's how you've made me. And I was struck by something where we all went to see a particular village, and the deprivation, the need was horrific in this particular place. It was where gypsies used to live, but it was in squalor. It was absolutely unbelievable. And the mud you were standing in was poo. That's the best way to put it. It was just disgusting. And the health was outrageous. There was no education. And children were being violently beaten. And young girls were prostituted all the time. It was an unbelievable situation. But this is what I learned about myself. I got quite angry. Not at people, but I got annoyed. And I said to the tour person who was taking us around, I said, I'm not happy for you to just bundle us church leaders back into the bus and for us to go back to our nice hotel room when we've got meals set up and we've got dinner sorted out. What are we going to do about this? And the tour leader said to me, what do you mean? We just want you to pray. Now, you can judge me for what I'm about to say, but I said, that's not good enough. I'm not happy to just pray whilst I've got money in my pocket and I was representing this church. And I said, our church would be furious if this need was right in front of us and we chose to just pray. Pray plus action is the church that I'm from. We pray that God would inspire people, especially those in influence, whether it's politicians, whether it's local charities, give them huge wisdom to know how best to help. But now we also want to do something, especially when we have so many resources at our disposal. But here's the thing that upset me, and I was upset for weeks, Louise will tell you. I was the only pastor, the only church leader who wanted to actually do something. All the others said, we just don't get you, Steve. We don't understand you. And I said to them, well, quite frankly, that's fine. If your conscience allows you to go home to bed, fine. But mine says we've got to do something. And I haven't been disturbed by that, but I've never forgotten that kind of event because it said to me that I'm odd. That's what it said to me. Now, I would like some of you to join me in my oddness this morning. And I mean that in a nice way, okay? Because if we just looked at us as a group of people here, if we are representative of the UK, and we're not at all, but let's just say that we are, how many of us would want to do something if we had resources, money in our pocket, let's say? How many of us would want to do something? I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up. But I'd like to think that a good chunk of us, if we could, would get off our backsides and do something. And praying is active. Don't hear that I'm saying we don't pray. I'm saying we pray and then ask God, what is my responsibility? How am I going to respond? But here's the thing. Why? Because I would like someone to do that for me and my family if the reversed roles were the other way around. If I was that father, if my daughter was in those shoes being prostituted, I would be praying that someone would do something to help. Not that they would just pray, but that they would pray and do something. Now, here's the irony. One of the families, especially there was a young girl who was being prostituted, she was 10 years old. 10. And she had nowhere to go home at night because mum and dad were sleeping on the hot water pipes of the village. And this thing, in Romania is a very Cold War type environment. The whole city has got hot water pipes running everywhere above ground. So the homeless people huddle around the pipes for warmth. And this girl, we basically, as a church, I just got the church checkbook out. I don't know whether I told you this. Doesn't matter, really. And I just said, we're buying her a tent, right? And we bought her family a tent. Now, you might think, oh, that's great. Well, trust me, that was a major step in the right direction. Because when it rained, they had a shelter. And we went and bought them food parcels. And we then started to support what the charity was doing to help the father get a job so he didn't have to prostitute his daughter. So there were quite a few steps to try to help. But this is the interesting thing. I went back, in fact, I think with a couple of you guys. Anna, you came back with me a couple of years later. 2 years after, was it? Maybe it was. 2013, was it? And I remember that we wanted an update to see what happened to this girl. This is the sad story. She was helped. The family was helped. But the father got drunk one night and actually put his wife on a train track. And a train came and chopped her head off. This is the mother. Now, I don't know. How am I meant to respond to that? What am I meant to say? Other than just stand there and cry for the situation. Now, the girl is alive, and she's now being helped by the charity. She's been brought into like a hostel environment, which I think is massively helpful. But how many other families are there? And Kingsford, the little boy that we sponsor, and Colleen, the little boy that we just heard about, they are well better off because of the sponsorship that's in place through Compassion and through other charities that do the same. But how many other families are there? And how many of us have the resources to help but aren't? That's my question for us this morning. Let's do for someone else what we'd like them to do if we were in their shoes. Let's just pray, shall we? Heavenly Father, we cannot deny that in the last few weeks you haven't opened our eyes through the media to the plight of many people in our world. We see the images. We've been touched by the bodies washed up on the beach. We've been touched by families desperate to get their kids into a safer place. And we don't really know how to help. But Lord, there are so many situations with charities that are on the ground where they do know how to help. And I just ask that you would, not through any words that I've shared or any video we saw this morning, but I just pray, Lord, that you would speak to each one of us about how we can help someone else in need. Not whether we should, but how we can help someone else in need. Lord, would you reveal people both local to us, maybe wider in our country, or maybe further afield around the whole world? The needs are close to us, in our country, and global. So would you motivate us not just to pray, but to pray and act? Lord, steer our compassion, steer our generosity, because we would be so grateful if we had been born in a different country and we were in desperate need of that help. In Jesus' name, we commit these things to you. Amen. Amen.